sound set.
The Disciplined Investor is all about you, your money, and the markets. Sit back and get ready for this edition of the Disciplined Investor Podcast.
This episode of the Disciplined Investor is sponsored by Horowitz & Company. If you're looking for a portfolio manager, look no further. Horowitz & Company, from seed through harvest, cultivating financial success.
The yen is getting whacked. Einhorn abandons his lawsuit versus Apple, and there is a big week ahead. For economic news in the United States and around the world, all this and so much more on this edition, number 303 of the Disciplined Investor Podcast. Well, welcome to March. How are you doing out there? I got to tell you something. I make all sorts of comments about, hey, it's so warm here in Florida and all you guys up north and out west in the northern west area and around the world that you're dealing with this cold. What are you doing? You know what? You gave it to me good this week. It's going to be down to, I think it's going to be down to close to maybe 39 or 40 degrees down in South Florida. And I got to tell you, when it gets down to like 70, we start putting our kind of sweaters on and, you know, I saw a lot of scarves going out, the UGG boots are coming out, and everybody's kind of celebrating the potential for one or two nights of a freeze. Again, a freeze is probably under 60 for us down here, but well, we're living the life of the Northerners right now, so there you got it. Lots going on, talking about cold weather. We got a little bit of chill that seems to be approaching from China. You know, we saw that over the last, I guess the last 2 weeks, we've seen a couple of different reports that have come out that China looks like their economy is still growing, but slowing down from the 1 or 2 months that they had that reprieve. Over the last year or so, the different mechanisms that the Chinese government used in order to slow down the economy and to keep pace with a reasonable level of inflation, and also in their eyes, a very important thing to make sure that their banks are solid because they have a lot of bad debt and a lot of bad loans that are rising on a regular basis. They have a lot of situations where the property prices are just, you know, mushrooming and getting crazy. They had to clamp down and all that. And at the same time, a lot of inflation. Well, what happened was that they kind of laid off a little bit because they saw that inflation was starting to regulate and get a little bit more moderate. And what happened was their economy started to stage a little bit of a comeback. The exchanges on the equities went haywire, went from the December. If you look at a chart of whether it's the Shenzhen or the Shanghai Index, kind of did a, it's not even a 45 degree, it's probably closer to about a 70 degree angle higher on the speculation that there would be additional growth, even though their GDP was slowing down. And the thought that about a 7.5% or so, maybe 7.9% GDP is going to all they can give. Retail sales have been slowing down. Problems with the fact that their currency was rising and then the euro was dropping. And one of their major trading partners had been a problem. But yet at the same time, like we've seen, a lot of investors are ignoring the bad news, which is good. And they're just picking up on the good news or the good components that they see. We saw that with Amazon a few weeks ago. Remember that when we talked about that, where Amazon came out with a miserable report on their earnings. But yet at the same time, investors looked for that one silver lining when they looked at the revenue growth and the margins and decided that, hey, initially they're going to buy this stock up. And since it has dropped over, this is a great lesson because one of the things that we do know is that fundamentals will catch up eventually. Sometimes they're ahead, sometimes they're a little bit behind. It all depends on the sentiment. And right now we have a sentiment that is by the dips. A lot of retail is coming back in. As a matter of fact, we saw over the last 2 months, mutual fund inflows from stock fund into stock funds, as opposed to what we saw previously, have been pretty impressive. I think $44 or $50 billion came in. At the same time, investors are getting kind of squeamish about bonds. They're selling their bond funds thinking that, hey, there's going to be something that is going to come into play here where bond yields start to move higher, kind of fighting the Fed in a way with regard to their continuation and their affirmation that they will continue with their $85 billion purchases per month. And who knows after that what happens. And possibly it's because the U.S. economy has been stabilizing and doing a little bit better. But at the same time, you know, we have this whole sequestration that went into effect last Friday, signed into law by President Obama. after it was forced upon the government by their own means to cut $85 billion initially, upwards of $1 trillion total over the next 10 years, from spending. So what does that mean? Well, investors don't think it means very much, it seems, because right until the last second, I think they believed that there was going to be a 11th hour save, as we've seen before, right? The last couple of times we've seen this. At the same time, it was kind of wondering, I was wondering, well, how is that going to happen when, in fact, the Congress on Friday was kind of mostly off and there was nobody really able to do any kind of voting. And they were so far apart anyway. And in the end, what happened was March 1st came and went, and it was signed into law. So now we have a cut to the defense. We have cut to just all sorts of smaller, so Medicare. We have small programs here and there. We have all sorts of discretionary cuts that are happening. And the question is going to be, how does that affect the economy? And I think a lot of you have been probably thinking about that. I've been thinking about that. There's been a lot of discussion, whether it's from, you know, you see on the television or news or you read about, or you read from the official sources like the Congressional Budget Office, the CBO. You know, the prediction is from the CBO that we're going to see about a half to maybe three-quarter drop in GDP due to this. And on top of that, we're going to see, you know, upwards of, you know, you can kind of take a range, but maybe 100,000 jobs lost or so the first year, and possibly up to about 750,000 jobs lost over the period due to this particular rule. Now, remember something. This is the thing that is really important about this, that this was a agreed upon policy that was put into place after the debt ceiling was raised last year. And it was agreed upon because that nobody thought it would actually go into effect. They thought that, you know what, this is so egregious. This is so, random. It is so immediate when it happens that there is no way that we're not going to get Congress and all the politicians off their tuchuses and get them to do something about this. Because, man, look at what's going on. Look at this terrible law. But you know what? They had about a year and a half or so, and nothing happened. So, you know, blame it on one side, blame it on the other. I don't care who we blame it on. But the fact of the matter is, it is here now. And we have to really look at this from the perspective of investing. And where do we go from here? You know, I've told you over the last 2 or 3 weeks here that we've been very nervous about the markets in terms of the short term. You know, we'll deal with the long term in a little while. But right now, the short term looks very, very vulnerable. One of the things that really sticks out is the continuation of buying the dips here. And I got to tell you something. I've been around long enough to know that buying the dips works for a while. It works very well for a while. But you know what? When there's no more or limited dip buyers around, what eventually happens? We see a breakdown. We already saw a very significant reversal this year. We saw a very significant downside reversal. So that kind of nice creep upward and the kind of slow and steady pace in one direction, the trend, has kind of been broken right now. And it looks to me that if we see the continuation of this sequester rule and if we see that gas prices remain as high as they are, you know, we're all excited that they dropped for 3 days in a row last week after going up all year and even though oil prices were down. And if we see that the personal income, which on Friday was reported to have dropped 3.6%, which is the largest amount since 1973, a lot of that due to the increase in payroll taxes, of course. And spending not really increasing. A 0.2 was put out on Friday, which is the same as last month. So it is slightly growing from the zero line, but at the same time, it's kind of stagnating from a growth standpoint. So when we see this, you know, you have to kind of say, wait a minute, how long can this go? You know, are consumers going to pull back? Are we going to see a slowdown and people starting to say, you know what, I want to kind of increase my savings here. I want to stash the money away for a rainy day and I'm not going to spend as much money and all that. Now, you could say that makes a lot of sense, you know, and then, of course, you kind of follow that through with markets and you follow it through with retail and you look at the various consumer goods and you start to scratch your head and wonder how long that could last. Well, I'll tell you something. It's interesting. You wouldn't know it from the consumer confidence report we saw on Friday, which was the final reading for February from the University of Michigan. And what happened? They actually were 2 points higher than anticipated. And you got to scratch your head and wonder, let me get this straight. We see that taxes are going up. We see that there's all sorts of headwinds from headlines and all sorts of the sequester coming and all that. And somehow, magically, consumers got more positive during the end of the month compared to where they were. And the revision, the third revision of the – it's the third or the second revision? Well, the revision, the final revision of the Consumer Confidence Index went to higher than anticipated. That's good. Now, let's hold that thought for a second. We also saw something else on Friday that was really kind of, I was a little skeptical about this because I really am having a hard time understanding how the calculation came together. Because when you look at all the regional manufacturing numbers, whether it's the Philly Fed, Chicago, you know, you look at the Milwaukee, you look at the New York or the Metro up there, you know, you look at all the different regions around. And generally speaking, we saw some really atrocious numbers over the last couple of months. We saw that manufacturing was down. That really had to do with a lot of the factory order issues because inventory was rising, as I've talked about. And you have to wonder, wait a minute. Okay, let's see. You got to think that, hey, I can't imagine this manufacturing number coming out really strong. It may not be weak, but not really strong. Well, meanwhile, it comes out 2 points higher than it was the prior month, which is pretty amazing considering that all the regionals were down. So I don't know where they got the excess from right now, especially with durable goods falling 5.9% on the month. So it's really a bit of a head scratcher how this is all going on right now, how we're getting the good news on some of these economics. Yet at the same time, if you look at the underlying features of the economy and you look at the jobless rate and you look at all the different things, what do you have going that really could be making people feel good? Well, you have really two things. The first thing clearly is, well, you have a new year, okay. But the other thing that you have, and the other two things that you have is, number one, you have home values that are going up. We saw the Case-Shiller numbers last week doing pretty well, actually, you know, plus over the 5% level from a year over year basis on the 20-city Case-Shiller number. That's pretty good. Kind of definitely showing us there's some strength there. We saw the NHB the week before that showed that builders were still kind of, you know, pretty positive here. We saw that last week also, or the realization that maybe the stock market, the wealth effect that Ben Bernanke has been a big proponent of, has been really helping along with the consumer confidence. So you get more value in your home, and that kind of, you know, takes some of the pressure off a little bit. And maybe some people that were underwater are no longer underwater. They feel like, hey, you know what? Finally, we're getting a little bit ahead here. You know, we had this house that we thought was going to be, you know, maybe worthless, or we're going to go bankrupt, or, you know, be foreclosed on. And now they have value in it, and that's good. And then all of a sudden we have the fact that the stock market is going up. So we look at our 401k numbers and we look at, you know, our portfolios and we say, okay, that's interesting for the average guy. Okay, great. Meanwhile, the taxes are going up for the rich, and we saw taxes going up for everybody else as well through the payroll tax. And the fact that the government is going to be having a massive amount of pullback on that. And then the final capper to all this is, which is really the most interesting thing I think we have to look at here, is the fact that the dollar is at a multi-month high. The yen keeps on getting kind of squashed here. It went up a bit over the last week, and then the last couple of days really came down hard. The euro is getting smoked. And then we have the dollar, which is the currency of refuge right now. And whether or not it's because we look at the trade-weighted numbers and take a look at whether that European countries and the euro, generally speaking, is in a recession. Japan is going to weaken, and they're still in a deflationary time. GDP is still negative. And the U.S. is having a little bit more of a stabilizing force when it comes to their currency. So I think that has something to do with it. But you have to try to look behind this and wonder how much of this is a safety trade, how much of this is a short covering and a short squeeze from the perspective of the dollar and also the yen being the trading currency of choice right now. And in full disclosure, we dropped our yen exposure last week for a small loss. We're not going to hold on to that through this kind of muscling that we're seeing that's going on. We had a reasonable gain, a couple of percent for a currency position, and that kind of evaporated in a couple of days. And we said, you know what, we're not going to play against any of these governments or with them, frankly. We don't want to go on either side of that discussion because it could be brutal. It's absolutely brutal. So I want to talk about the situation with a couple of different things. I want to talk about Apple and what's going on with Einhorn and the price of Apple. I think we're all interested in that. JCPenney came out with earnings. We're going to talk about that in Herbalife. I also want to talk about some of the economics that are coming up and a really interesting article that I read about short sales, the short positions that investors have right now. Before I do that, I want to mention that a couple of different things. Number one, I know a lot of you have in the past and recently written in about, hey, the Trigger Point research, the commodity alerts. For those of you that either have the commodity alerts or had a trial of the commodity alerts, You can actually get those automatically traded through a brokerage account now. So that's really cool. Because instead of worrying about, hey, I have to be up what hour and I have to do what when, I'm in Australia, I'm in New Mexico, I'm in, you know, England, wherever it is, we can actually set up your account that will automatically trade once the signals go out, so that if you have, let's say, an account that's, $25,000 and we're going to do one contract per $25,000, you'll automatically, when that trade is alerted, it hits automatically. Great service. So you can check that out over at triggerpointresearch.com. And also, of course, the equity alerts are doing pretty well. We've had some really good runs with both of those, and you could see the performance of the portfolios. I think that the commodity alerts are up close to 15% since November, or 18% since November. And the equity alerts go back much further than that, and they're doing very well as well. For those of you that are a little bit nervous about the markets and you're kind of like, hey, I don't know what to do right here, we're getting a lot of calls about that lately, because people are getting a little, I guess the best word to say is weirded out by some of the recent action in the markets. You know, it goes down and then we get a number, it goes up, and then it kind of goes down again. And then, you know, it's kind of like the daily movements are so wide right now that it's confusing a lot of people. So we have something for that as well. It's called the Disciplined Investor Managed Growth Strategy, where we actually invest your money using a variety of different strategies, but we have long positions and we have short positions. And right now, as we sit here at this moment, we have mostly short positions. We actually took a lot of money out of the portfolio positions about 2 weeks ago when I talked to you about the fact that we had a very high reading on the KRI index. And we've only really done that a couple of times in the past, where we've really taken out virtually every position from the portfolio, because the indicators that we're seeing all spiking to the same levels were very concerning. And at the same time, the volatility that was picking up during that time, and the lack of direction that it seemed to be, you know, bantering back and forth between a range, we're starting to get to a level that, you know what, we'll move into that direction as it shows itself, as it appears. But right now it's kind of bouncing back and forth either way. And that's no place to really be, because it really can create a lot of uncertainty and personal emotional anxiety for an investor. So kind of, you know, we said at this point, we don't see any reason to be pressing our luck with any of these long positions. So we kind of went short on index trades, and also kind of moving in and out of, I mentioned the yen and crude oil. Did a short on that a couple weeks ago and last week, and switched that around at the end of the week. So, you know, if you want any information about that, thedisciplinedinvestor.com, go there, check it out, and we'll provide you with a 13-minute, 14-minute video kind of walkthrough, virtual tour, if you will, of the strategy, what we do, and how you can get involved in that. All right, so let's talk about a couple things here. I definitely want to talk about this Herbalife thing. I guess we'll just do it. You know, have you been following this whole, I don't even know what it is, but it's amazing. It's one of the, probably in the 20 plus years that I've been in business, it is one of the most fascinating things that I have seen in the markets. The amount of aggressiveness that we're seeing from activist investors, and they usually will turn themselves against the company, the board, et cetera, but now they're turning themselves against each other. You know, we have this Icorn and Ackman situation that is brewing, where Ackman, who came out publicly in December and talked about his 20 million share short of Herbalife, and has been continuing to talk about over the last couple of years his long position in JCPenney, he came out and did a 300-page presentation, or 300-slide presentation at the Irisone conference, and really just you know, right through the heart of Herbalife, you know, came up with the whole concept that this is a fraud, as he said. It is a company that has built itself on bleeding out essentially the people that supposedly were supposed to be the sellers. It does a bad bookkeeping. It has just all these things, and he wants an investigation to whether or not it's a pyramid scheme. He believes it is, with everything and with a lot of money, obviously. And the stock dropped pretty significantly. And then, lo and behold, a couple months ago, Carl Icahn comes in and says, hey, you know what? We don't know what he's talking about. Bought a big piece of the company, kind of keeps coming out with some commentary about, oh, we're going to be picking up 13% of the company, and they file a 13F, and they file a variety of different 13 disclosures. And what happens is stock on one of them actually went up about 28% and then came right back down the next day to the zero line, which was, or maybe up a few percent. And then that didn't seem to work too well for him. So what happened next? Well, he then said, well, we have about rights to buy about 25% of the company in total. And the disclosure was a little bit lame because he came out with the discussion that, oh, you know what, we're but you know what, behind the scenes, it was a combination of options and stock, which was not as powerful for most people than if he actually took a position in the company that large. And he's been arguing with Ackman dramatically, and Lieb has been arguing with Ackman, and pretty much nobody's on Ackman's side at this point. The company clearly is against him. And now what's happened is that Icahn is coming back again and saying, hey, you know what, we're going to put people on the board. He was elected to the board and all that. Now, I was talking to a few colleagues about this, and I said, you know, what do you make of this? Because, I don't know, it seems a little peculiar how much Icahn is really trying his best to prove this company is something strong, is something, you know, really that he wants to possibly take private. He used the words like strategic acquisition. He talked about strategic alternatives. He talked about, you know, all these buzzwords that you always hear from these private equity guys and these guys that are the raiders of the various companies, and they come in with these keywords that everybody always looks for and kind of drives the stock in one direction or the other. Now, what we found peculiar was how far Icahn was going to prove his point. You know, they say he who protests too much, right? Well, on that news, again, the stock started to move up on the news that Icahn was taking a 25% position, and then kind of started to slowly drift down last week at the end of the week. So we kind of like looked at this and said, you know, we took a short position on Herbalife when the initial announcement came out that Icahn was buying a piece of this and made some nice money because it came all the way down. And we actually entered another small short position on this because it's clear that there is this incredible fight going on. And if, in fact, the news comes out as a potential news item came out last week where there was a stock halted, where we thought everybody thought that what was going to happen was it was going to be a pyramid scheme with the FTC looking into it. Well, that's what's in the mind of investors, and they don't really want to take a part of this. So I think what's happening is that between Ackman probably doing his best to keep the price down and Icahn doing his best to bid it up and to talk it up, you have this amazing war going on, which creates incredible volatility, uncertainty, and at the same time, opportunity. These are things you want to look at. But I find this really amazing because some of the discussion went to the topic that Ackman has also a humongous position in JCPenney. Now, if you've been following that stock, it's awful. I mean, it's just absolutely abysmal. Aside from the fact that Ron Johnson, who is this, you know, whiz kid and this golden child from Apple that created the Apple stores and the Genius Bar and all that, and he's going to JCPenney and everybody's all excited, and Ackman's behind it and runs through all the numbers and shows how great it is, their profit is just miserable. Sales are down just dramatically. I mean, it's astonishing. They've lost customers. They've lost the loyalty of many of their customers of what they've done and created this new pricing model, which nobody wanted, it seemed. And now Ron Johnson has said he's capitulated. He said, you know what? All right. We're going to go back to, you know, sales, because this everyday low price and same price and all that is just didn't work. People weren't kind of into it. Maybe he was ahead of his time. You know, maybe he was the kind of the Etzel of department stores. But at the same time, investors didn't like it, nor did consumers. So the stock has been dropping, and it's getting worse and worse and worse. So now Ackman, with this humongous position in JCPenney, which he's clearly underwater in, it's questionable whether he's underwater in the Herbalife transaction at this point. But now that discussion is being turned to, if JCPenney keeps on going down in price and Herbalife moves up in price, is this going to really put the squeeze on Ackman? Is he going to have to do some short covering? Is he going to have to start covering his long position of JCPenney and sort of getting out of this? Or what is he going to do? Now, Ackman's a very smart guy. So, you know, maybe he's hedged some of that out already. You know, maybe he has some options on it, leaps or whatever, on either of these sides. But it is kind of interesting that this discussion is going on now because, you know what? Icahn has a real vendetta, it seems, against Ackman. And the question you have to ask yourself is how far is he willing to go to really bury this guy? Stemming over some kind of a payment that was due or some kind of a deal, about $4 million a few years ago. And it seems that Icahn has never really given up the hostility and the anger about the situation. So I would watch those two stocks and watch how they diverge or come together, and it will tell you a really interesting story. But it is interesting about how the topic has turned to this, because you have to, as an investor, look at this as an opportunity, because there could be a very substantial drop of Herbalife if the FTC comes out, and then you have Icon bailing and everybody kind of bailing out. Or you can have, you know, the reality of a big short squeeze if, in fact, you see that Icon is all of a sudden having to cash in some of his chips because he's getting some of his requests for withdrawals of very unhappy clients who are invested in this. Well, so, you know, something I think is really interesting to take a look at. But I'll tell you something. The one thing that really is frightening is JCPenney, whose bond rating was dropped last week by rating companies. And, you know, it really is a very tough time for that particular investment vehicle right now, because it's just you know, they've really losing out to others. Let's switch over, though, to the discussion of Apple. The friend of Ackman is Einhorn. Einhorn, also one of the same activist investors who is very involved, who was very involved with the whole Apple situation of trying to get Apple to disgorge just a massive amount of their cash, saying that, you know what, this is ridiculous. I own this company. They have $100+ billion of cash on the books. They're not paying a decent dividend. You know, they should be giving it back. They don't do stock buybacks. So he went this really weird route and tried to get Apple and to split off the vote of the ability of Apple to issue certain securities, preferred securities, from the regular vote that went on during the annual conference. And the reason was that he thought that, you know, basically that everybody that was going to check off the, you know, for the directors and for this and for that, it was going to kind of check off and agree to everything, where he wanted this to stand alone. In the end, it seems that Einhorn last week dropped his lawsuit against Apple. Apple shares have been slowly drifting. Well, maybe not slowly. They've been drifting. They've been, you know, cascading lower into the 430 range now, where they were in above the 700s not too long ago. And it seems that, once again, hedge funds who were so heavily invested in this, as a matter of fact, AIG is now the number one invested stock by hedge funds in terms of total valuation, and Apple is now number two. But this was a love affair of Wall Street. This was just the stock that just wouldn't quit, that is never going to go down. Cash on the books is great. Cash flow is great. Valuations are really reasonable. Cash cow, they're selling things like crazy. And then all of a sudden, this abrupt halt after three quarters of Apple saying, hey, guys, we're going to kind of probably be slowing down in terms of our overall sales. We're just going to, you know, well, a couple of quarters, they didn't care. And all of a sudden, everybody wakes up and realizes that, hey, wait a minute. Ooh, look at all these Google devices that are selling. Look at all these competitors that are coming out with tablets. And even though Apple has the major share of some of these areas, I mean, boy, there is definitely more than one game in town at this point. Apple shares drop off dramatically. And where do they go from here? Could they clip 300? Very possible. But the moral to the story is something else. The moral to the story is something I've talked about several times, and I really want to focus in on this because I think it's really important. I really do. And that is this, that when you see that everybody's on one side of the boat or the other, there's usually a short-term to mid-term opportunity, sometimes a very long-term opportunity, to actually go on the other side of that. Call it contrarian investing. Call it being smart and kind of waiting for the right signals and then profiting from them. But one of the things that we noticed is that when you see that you get the headlines that investors are the shortest they've been or the lightest they've been on gold, or when they say that, you know, everybody's invested in Apple and everybody's coming out with upgrades and all that, that's usually the time that you want to start saying, let me think about this a little bit further. And when you see a little bit of kink in the armor and you see a roll or change in the direction and the trend of that particular instrument, you have to really start perking up your attention and keeping very aware of this. So we started to look at AIG, which, you know, has been a stock that has been in just terrible turmoil over the years. Almost went bankrupt, had to get the government to bail them out. The stock, if you look back on a chart, was at one time, if you look at all the splits and all that and reverse splits, about $1,500 in value. And now it's in the, you know, it's in 30-something. Question is, where does it go from here? Well, you have everybody basically investing in it. And once again, I want you to keep your ears open for when AIG changes direction, because then all of a sudden you get everybody kind of moving at one time to either sell out or to lighten their positions, and you get a really good opportunity on the downside on this particular one. Very similar to when you have all this really bad news on a company like, U.S. Steel or maybe one of the coal companies, that when you see that, it just can't get any worse. I mean, how much worse can it get? Oftentimes when you see that change of direction, it's a really good time for a short-term trade that you can make some money in. And then obviously pay attention to the fact that those trades do turn. So you have to kind of be quick about it. Sometimes it is a situation like we saw with the banks or maybe even with the housing and the builders, where finally, after nobody wanted to be with them for, I don't know, 2, 3, 4, 5 years, all of a sudden they're the number one performing sector. And this is a classical rotation strategy that is used, not always profitable, but if you can catch on to when the rotation does in fact occur, this is something that could really, really benefit you. So I want you to kind of look at those opportunities. Step back for a minute, you know, maybe take out a piece of paper and pen and just think about all the different trends that you've seen and some of the things that are really peaking or troughing and look at where can I find the next opportunity. This is a great way to kind of look at the contrarian side of investing to figure out if there is something that really makes a lot of sense. And find where that is, write it down, and keep on referring to it maybe on a weekly basis to see, you know, where that chart is going and how that may change. Look at high-yield bonds for a second. You know, for the longest time, it looked like high-yield bonds were really just overbought, and not from a statistical standpoint or a indicator standpoint, but from the standpoint that, boy, investors are really going after the junk at this point, and that's just inevitably going to kind of turn around. And this went on for a long time, a couple of years at least, that, you know, junk bonds were really powering ahead. People were just dying for the return on them and really without a care about what the rating was or what the risk was, just really searching for the yield. And this actually, I remember this back in the 80s when this occurred. We saw that everybody was just reaching for the Ginnie Mae's and the Freddie Mac's, and they were just buying all these different funds without understanding what they were all about and just, you know, really just chasing yield left and right. And that's a really bad scenario, because when that happens, oftentimes is where you're finding the bonds that are the yields at the lowest price they are everywhere else. And a time when people start really worrying about this, a time often when you find the last leg of a particular rally. And then what happens? Well, when that kind of rally does the rotation back to the other side and reverses, you get a very powerful sell-off. And what happens with bonds, of course, is as the yields go up, what happens is the bond price goes down. So people then are stuck. They're like, well, you know what? I got the 4 or 5% yield that I was looking for or whatever it may be. And you know what? The bonds will come back one day. I'll be fine. But meanwhile, they're buying bonds at a super premium over what the valuation really should be in normal times. And therefore, their principal value just diminishes and starts leaking out on a prolonged basis. We've been in a 20-year bond bull market. Historically low prices for low yields and high prices on bonds. And I got to tell you, we had some clients that we saw a bond that's in their portfolio that was potentially going to be one of those that would be called eventually. It was trading at $170, 70% over par. It was a good yield, but the potential for being called in a couple of years, we said, you know what, let's look at this and do the calculation. And we said, you know what, we're selling this. Because when are you going to ever capture that? We know for a fact in bonds that when they mature or they get called at par, whatever premium that's on that bond, you are going to lose. We know that for a fact. There's no question about that. If you have a 30-year bond that, let's say, is at 8%, and right now it's in its 10th year, let's say, and that bond is currently priced, you bought it for $100 par per bond, and now all of a sudden, that, let's call it, the $10,000 that you invested is worth $13,000, plus you'd be getting this great interest rate all these years. We know for a fact that while the interest rate is good on that, we also know that when it does mature in 20 years from now, you are going to be down to the $10,000 face value that is supposed to be the value that you'll be paid back that was promised to you. So just consider that. Look at the junk bond funds. Look at the ETFs for opportunities there for the short side. I'd also kind of start looking at what's happening with gold, and it just keeps on getting a little bit more appealing to me as we're finding more and more people on the other side of the fence that say that, hey, gold is over and this and that. But you know what? We still have this ridiculous amount of central bank intervention, currency printing, and potential for inflation. We will, I would think, as a world, maybe not any individual country, we will have some inflation back one day. The grand experiment that Japan is doing, which will be very detrimental to the global economy in years to come by talking down the currency and beating it down as much as they have. If they are successful at bringing it up to 100 or so, maybe 98 to 102 over the very near term, and they spike their markets up, I got to tell you something, that's great, but it's not good for the global economy. Well, yeah, it may be good for the global economy in a temporary basis where they have more money to spend because the yen is lower value. We could buy more from them. They could do more consumer spending internally and blah, blah, blah. And they get a lot more business because the yen is low valued. And what's going to happen is that they're going to have a lot more countries actually purchasing from them. The bigger picture where they are doing this big manipulation, this big experiment to really press down their currency is not something good that is going to be reflected on a worldwide basis if we get into this competitive devaluations and the competitive amount of stimulus that we're pouring on the economies. I had an interesting argument with someone, or discussion that ended up in an argument today, where we talked about how, you know, well, who's doing it right? Democrats, Republicans, Europe, Australia, you know, where's it all going right? And you know what? Right now, it seems that most countries are, you know, doing what they can to do simply one thing, and that's to just pour as much money onto the problem as they can without actually fixing the underlying issues. We have already seen that Europe is starting to be questionable again. The euro dropped, you know, like a rock last week. And that is because that the reality is that none of the underlying problems that were there before are really rectified. All they did was promise to back everything. But the problems that were there, the structural problems with the banks and the unemployment and the economies have not only have they not disappeared, they're resurging again as even worse than they were before. So all they did was pacify investors here thinking that would be the great thing. So here's the question for you. If historically we know that back in 2007, 2008, 2009, that the Fed, the Treasury in the United States was there, and so were others around the world to back up and backstop the banks and the financial system because they overspent, they overloaned, overleveraged, individuals did the same thing, and they were there as the savior of last resort, the place where you can go just in case the house is burning down to put it out before it really got too bad. If they were there for that, and that's who we look to, who is going to be there when they do the same thing and have the same, make the same mistakes by overleveraging, overspending, and not being conscientious with how they are actually going about, working with their budgets and their debt problems? Who is going to bail out the sovereigns? Who's left? Well, God. Thor, masters of the universe. I don't know. There's nobody left. You can't bail out the sovereigns. The sovereigns are the last stop in the bailout line, if you will. But once you get past that, there's no one left. So the question is going to be, how can they really come up with some kind of a solution here? And to bring this all tightly together, then you have to ask yourself, what's going to happen with markets? Once the situation gets to a point that we all realize that, you know what, we can't live on stimulus alone. One of the things we also saw was an interesting article that I mentioned before about investors who are reducing their bearish stock bets to the lowest level since 2007. And short sales in the Standard & Poor's composite of the 1500 index fell to 5.6% of shares available for trading in February, down from a record 12% during the credit crisis and the lowest ever in data compiled by a few of the different groups, including Bloomberg. And the last time the number of shares borrowed and sold short approached this level, the equity markets lost about 3.5% in the next 3 months. So what's happening is bulls are basically capitulating and they're saying, hey, you know what? Or bears are capitulating and bulls are saying they are capitulating. And the rally is going to be intact and there's a good sign of that because of that. But you know what? Again, this goes back to what we said. When everybody's on one side, when there's just a tremendous amount of short interest, you know, you think people are very bearish, but really what all it takes is a little spark to get that short squeeze going and that rally going. On the other hand, when everybody has really dropped their short positions down so significantly, how hard is it for them to then pick those back up and increase those? So now what you're seeing is a couple of different people who said, hey, when you see this short interest at this low levels like this, it means that people are very, very bullish. And when that happens, it's a bearish signal because all minds change. There's a downside, not an upside. So, you know, I think that when we look at this whole situation, you have to look at the fact that there is this incredible amount of optimism that's going on right now in the face of all the pessimistic news and information that's out there. And I think what we have to talk about what, in fact, is going to happen next week. So we have a few more important things happening. We have a few more economic data points that we have to look at. For example, we have the ISM New York. Okay, not the most important in the world. But we have the ISM non-manufacturing, or the service index, if you will, that is expected to be about 55 from about 55.2 last month. And this is, you know, kind of non-manufacturing numbers that we're going to look at. And that's been very, very strong. And since our country is really, our economy is based on consumers and services, this is a number that needs to be strong. And so far, so good. It's been holding in the 55 range, nice expansionary levels. We'll see what happens this week. We're going to see the ADP employment change. About 170,000 people are expected to be added to the payrolls after 192 last month. We have the factory orders coming out. Expectations are going to be for a negative 2.2% versus 1.8% to the positive, which again makes sense to me from all the numbers we're seeing from the regionals. Yet again, we saw this manufacturing number that was a little bit bizarre. We also have, importantly, the end of the week. We have initial jobless claims and, of course, the unemployment rate. So initial jobless claims are coming in to be about 355,000. They were a little bit low last week. There's some skewing for some of the storm issues or some issues that happened. And we'll see. That's been about 350 or 360 recently. And then we're going to see the jobs numbers that come out. We'll see what happens there right now. GDP came in at a 0.1, a whopping 0.1 last week, a revision from a negative 0.1. I don't think anybody was too happy about that. But we're going to see that the unemployment rate is expected to be about 7.9% steady from last month. And we'll see how the jobs numbers, you know, works out. Last month, we saw that there was a revision to the previous one, and that was a big revision, showing a lot more people were hired during 2012 than were originally reported. Again, you know, kind of we'll take a look at this and put this all into perspective. But the bigger issue right now is I think that we're seeing a lot of companies come out with, you know, lukewarm outlooks. And I think that the European situation is really brewing and getting people very nervous right now. That's what I want you to think about moving forward here. With all of this information that we just talked about on this episode, I want you to think about where are the potential pitfalls and where are the opportunities. Materials, some of the cyclicals, you got to kind of say, hey, you know what? Maybe I need to think about not really putting too much money in that area. Trading, okay, but you know, from a longer term perspective, I think you need to be careful. I think that when it comes to consumer discretionary, this is we're kind of reaching towards the end of the cycle here, towards the peak, and really be back more looking at some of the consumer staples and looking at some of the more specialty plays. You know, not every consumer discretionary is, you know, made alike, as we just saw with Macy's, for example, and JCPenney. But you have to look at, you know, what has been working, what hasn't been working, and start to really question how long that trend is going to last. You know, a lot of smart people talk about, you know, riding the trend until it breaks and then hopping off as fast as possible. Not always, you know, the easiest thing to do, because obviously you never exactly know when that trend breaks. But one of the things we do know is when we see some of the warning signals of when that occurs. And already we're seeing those. But you want to stay towards the areas that are, you know, more basic industries. You know, again, not some of the more global areas, because those that are affected by some of the things that have happened in Latin America as recently, like the devaluation, some of the other uncertainties down there. Europe, you want to stay away from. And then, of course, you have the situation with Japan, which is getting better in terms of their currency valuation, at least. China, which is, you know, starting to get a little bit better. But some of Asia is really having some difficulty with the fact that Japan is being so aggressive with their currency policy, and they are hurting dramatically. I also do wonder how long it's going to be until the fact that the dollar is at these levels really kicks in pretty strongly, because we haven't seen the real damage done that you would expect so far with regard to a currency moving up as high as it has in such a short period of time. Oftentimes when the dollar moves up, there is a directly inverse reaction with markets. We see that with Japan. When the yen moves down in value, what happens? Well, we see that their market gets, hurt pretty badly when the conversion of the U.S. To dollar to the yen and the other currencies to the yen, when the yen actually is strengthening, that is, all sorts of problem, because what happens there is that you can't buy the products. And when it weakens, it's very good. As a matter of fact, so good that it's almost, if you've seen how much the yen has, gotten weaker in the recent months, the stock market has moved up almost 1-to-1, which is pretty astonishing. So when you look at this, I think that we have to consider the fact that we are in a very heightened awareness time for uncertainty. And I want you to consider things like looking at VIX options. I want you to think about things like some of the short-term ETFs that go inverse of the various markets. I want you to stay away from some of the retailers right now, be selective, and realize that consumers have less to spend because of the gas prices and because of the fact that their paychecks are lower. And we see that across not only, in theory, we see that in action with the last week's report. So anyway, we have a couple of guests coming up in the next few weeks, because I have been here doing my thing, preaching pretty much to the choir, I think, as we all do oftentimes think alike from the emails that you send me. Please do keep sending those at askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. We're trying to get Scott O'Neill from Investors Business Daily. I think he's going to be coming on shortly. We're going to have Frankie on soon again. Have some discussion with some currency traders and commodity traders coming on. And there's a couple others I know that were coming on the next few weeks. So we got a pretty good level of people to talk to. Any recommendations you have, of course, we'll take as well and try to get them booked. Just send it on to the same email address, askandrew@thedisciplinedinvestor.com. Until next week, thanks for joining me. Have a great week, a successful week, and a very profitable week. Bye-bye.
The Disciplined Investor Podcast is sponsored in part by Horowitz & Company, a registered investment advisor and money manager. The information presented in this podcast is not intended to be used as the sole basis of any investment decisions, nor should it be construed as advice designed to meet the investment needs of any particular investor. Some discussion contains forward-looking statements which are based on current expectations, and differences can be expected. The Disciplined Investor's host, Andrew Horowitz, is a certified financial planner and registered investment advisor, regulated in various states. None of the information presented should be construed as an offer to sell or buy any particular security. As always, use your best judgment when investing. We'll be right back.